Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 1, which is entitled The First Step in God Realization, Text 14. Tavapye Dadhi Kodavya Saptaham Jivitavadi Upakalpaya Tatsarvam Tavat Yat Samparayikam Tavapye Tarhi Kodavya Saptaham Jivitavadi Upakalpaya Tatsarvam Tavat Yat Samparayikam Tavapye Tarhi Kodavya Saptaham Jivitavadi Upakalpaya Tatsarvam Tavat Yat Samparayikam Tava, your, api, also, itarhi, therefore, kodavya, O one born in the family of Kuru, saptaham, 7 days, jivita, duration of life, avadi, up to the limit of upakalpaya, get them performed, tat, those, sarvam, all, tavat, so long, yet, which are, samparayikam, rituals for the next life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikshit, now your duration of life is limited to 7 more days. So during this time, you can perform all those rituals which are needed for the best purpose of your next life. Purport. Shukadeva Goswami, after citing the example of Maharaj Katvanga, who prepared himself for the next life within a very short time, encouraged Maharaj Pariksit by saying that since he still had 7 days at his disposal, he could easily take advantage of the time to prepare himself for the next life. Indirectly, the Goswami told Maharaj Pariksit that he should take shelter of the sound representation of the Lord for the 7 days still remaining in the duration of his life and thus get himself liberated. In other words, everyone can best prepare himself for the next life simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam as it was recited by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit. The rituals are not formal, but there are also some favorable conditions which are required to be carried out as instructed hereafter. Om Ajnanti Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. We can say something for the pleasure of Shishi Radhe Shyam, Shishi Gornitai and Shri Krishna Balaram. May our words be aligned with Guru Parampara, and may all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. So again, this is Canto 2, Chapter 1, entitled The First Step in God Realization, Text 14. Maharaj Pariksit, now your duration of life is limited to 7 more days. So during this time, you can perform all those rituals which are needed for the best purpose of your next life. So just a little context. First, in the previous chapter, Maharaj Pariksit, he asked the most important question. And the question that he asks generates the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Karyam Mriya Manasya Sarvata. He says, what is the prime activity or the prime duty for a person who's about to die? That should be such a natural question to ask ourselves at some point in life. You know, I have to die, so what should I be doing? It's so simple, it's so natural. You know, you think at 10, 11 years old, 12 years old, that comes up naturally. We have to die here. Therefore, what should I do? But so quickly, we just get covered over by the environment, by the culture. We imitate everybody around us, and we just start striving for so many other things. And that question is just covered. So that's the question. And that generates the whole Bhagavatam, the answer to this question. And when Sukadeva Goswami hears this question, his very first words, he says, Shrota Vyadishu Yat Paraha, that this subject matter is the supreme subject matter of all subject matters. You ask the perfect question, and to give the answer, it will be the supreme topic, the supreme subject to hear. Those are his first words. And then, at the beginning of this chapter, he talks about apashayutam. But those who can't see, those who see realize this question is most essential. But those who can't see, the blind, they may desire to hear about so many other things that are not essential. There's this term in fifth canto, manaso vibhuti. Manaso, the mind, and vibhuti means like wonderful things. The mind can come up with so many wonders and creations of what we want to hear about, what we should focus on. We dream up so many things, that's what's meant. Many wonders going on in our mind. You know, I want to hear about racehorses. I want to hear about English literature. I want to hear about rugby. I want to hear about, I don't know, French fashion. You know, we so many wonderful things happening in the mind that I want to hear about this, I want to do that. I want to hear about scientific inventions. Actually, these are the modes of nature speaking through a person. It's not even the person that wants those things. It's the modes of nature speaking through a person. The soul is not so concerned about rugby, about, you know, so many forms of entertainment. But when the spiritual eyes close, then the material eyes open and we become very fascinated with everything around us. And so many subject matters fascinate us. So the soul is not having those desires. So what is it? The soul becomes dormant. And then the material mind, the material eyes, everything becomes very active and alive. And we get fascinated by different subjects according to the modes that we've acquired within us. And we seek a similar mode outside of us, and we get attracted to this topic or that topic, so many things. So Shukadeva Goswami, he explains this in the beginning of the chapter. We'll now speak about the supreme subject matter, but the blind, those who can't actually see, they get interested in all these other things, being fascinated by the material energy. But those who truly see, what do they want to hear about? That's the next verse, Sukadeva Goswami. Those who truly see, what do they want to hear? Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari Shrotavya. They want to hear about the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. In the following verse, he speaks of this. They want to hear about him, but also Narayana Smriti. They also always want to remember him in the core of their hearts. So one who actually sees with the eyes of the soul and not just these material eyes, they want to hear about the Supreme Lord. They want to chant his glories and they want to remember him always. And finally, a very famous verse, the 11th verse of this chapter. Shukadeva Goswami says, therefore, this is the definitive answer to your question. What is the prime duty of a person who's about to die? So text 11, the acharyas explain, is the direct answer. Harir Naam Anukirtanam. What should you do? You should take shelter of the name of Hari, Kirtan. Harir Naam Anukirtanam. So, and then he tells him, Shukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit, if you're concerned that, you know, you only have a week left, if that's a concern to you, You don't even need a week. In fact, you only need one moment. You just need one moment of consciousness. I was hearing this class by Prabhupada recently, and he was saying, somebody asked, how long does it take to surrender to Krishna? And Prabhupada became very animated, and he said, 1 second. Just 1 second, you can surrender to the Lord completely. Because it's not necessarily a moment in time, but it's a moment in consciousness. You know, we can't say it's going to be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 200 years, but somehow when the consciousness, as it gets purified, there's a moment in consciousness where we finally, you know, we begin to desire to do that, to understand that more, and then finally will we get the insight and realization of what it actually means. So it will just take a moment. When the time comes, like Bilva Mangala Thakur. You know, he struggled with material desires for so long, but suddenly it just clicked. When he heard these words, he heard some words, just a few words, and it just woke up. His consciousness finally became ready. So he tells him, 7 days, don't worry. In one moment is all that's needed. And then he gives an example for that. That may seem just, you know, impossible, one moment. But there's a story of Katvanga Maharaj. He comes from the dynasty of Amshuman, Katvanga. And he was such a great king and warrior that the demigods came to earth and recruited him to fight in a war. Just imagine Katvanga, what kind of warrior was he if the demigods requested his assistance in fighting the demons? So Katvanga Maharaj, he agreed. And he went up to the heavens for this fight. So remember, one day there is 6 months here. So if this battle took several days, then years passed by. And the demigods and Katvanga were victorious in this fight. And the demigods were so pleased with Katvanga that they offered him a benediction. We'll give you anything, what do you want? And he said, I want to know when I'm going to die. And they told him, just in a few moments. And that's just hearing that, he knew exactly what to do, and he was able. It says, utsrijya, that he completely just turned away. He let go of everything else and completely placed his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. He wasted no time. When he heard that news, you'll die in just a few moments, he wasted no time resisting that, you know. We resist so much. We get some inevitable news and we spend a long time resisting it. No, why is it? And we struggle. And same with Parikshit. As soon as he got the news that you had 7 days to live, tat padam, and may it be so, he just accepted it. Okay? Now I'll take shelter, go to the Ganges, take shelter of Shukadev Goswami and hear. And Katvanga also, as soon as he heard, he didn't think, this is unfair, this is impossible, why? You know, But he immediately accepted, he let go of everything and just fixed his mind on Krishna. So, that is a little summary, just leading up to this verse, today's verse. And it says here, saptaham, that you have, after telling the story of Katvanga briefly, Shukadev Goswami says, you have 7 days. And this term here in the Sanskrit, upa kalpaya samparayikam. You have 7 days left. So he tells him here, you yourself can perform the necessary preparations for death. He says, you yourself can do it. You know, there are different death rituals in every spiritual tradition. when somebody's dying, you know, Catholic priest may come in and do the last rites and will anoint the body with oil. You know, we have things that we do. Some traditions, they're chanting certain prayers. Muslims sometimes chant, what do they chant? 99 names of Allah. So the name of the Lord. They also, somehow that information is there for them that you should hear the name of the Lord at that time. We know that that's the essence of what should be done. And that's the question by Parikshit, and that's the answer by Shukadeva Goswami, to take shelter of the holy name of the Lord. But different rituals are done. I remember once I was working as a chaplain in a hospital, and I was on call overnight, and some man was dying, and they said, they called me, I'm the only on-call chaplain, and you kind of have to represent every religion if you're the only one, because, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can't expect to have everybody from your religion ready to just come and, you know, do some kind of death ritual at the very last moment. So anyway, this call came, and they asked for a Orthodox Christian priest. You know, the Eastern Church, Russian Orthodox priest. I said, well, I'm not that, but I'm going to come and just see if I can serve in some way. So I went there, and this man, only in his late 50s, he was passing away. His wife was there, and his daughter. And they said, oh, so great you're here. Are you, you're a Ukrainian Orthodox priest? I said, no, not at all. But if there's anything I can do to serve right now. They said, oh, but do you have the oil from the, you know, I don't have that. So they said, well, what are you? I said, I'm a Vaishnava, I'm a devotee of Krishna. And the daughter knew what that was. Actually, this family lived in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where 26th Second Avenue is, where I was living. And there's actually used to be a Ukrainian neighborhood, so there are still some families from the Ukraine in that area. But so they knew, living just around the corner from 26th Second Avenue, oh, the Krishna temple. She said, actually, my father, and the mother confirmed this, my father, it's better that you're here than some Ukrainian priest, because he was actually open to lots of traditions, and he had one friend from that temple. It was one tall Indian man, and he said he was a friend of his, and he was open to all kinds of traditions. So even though we asked for a Ukrainian priest, it's nice that you're here. So the wife of this man, she grabbed my hand, and she said, I don't know what all of you do when somebody's dying, but please do it with your full heart. And I said, well, what we do is we chant God's name. And if someone can hear God's name as they're passing away, it's considered to be the most auspicious departure. And she said, that's perfect. Show us how to do it. And so I just told her the name of Krishna, Hare Krishna. I sang, actually. And I had them sing along and gave them little information of how to follow. And they were into it. You know, there was the wife, the daughter, and the daughter's husband. And so I started chanting, started singing. And they were following along, singing along with me, and then the wife stopped me and said, can we hold hands? Sure. They'll be holding hands. And we went around the body of this man, and the nurse came in and said, it looks like just a few, you know, minutes could be. He's very close to passing. And so we were holding hands, and the wife was touching his heart, and we were all chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra together, and he just left his body, passed away. I was thinking, yeah, this man, somehow he had one devotee friend from long ago. He lived next to 26th Second Avenue, and then somehow it was arranged. And when I was wondering, what are they going to think when I tell them I'm not a Ukrainian priest, but I'm a Hare Krishna priest? And they loved it. And they said, perfect, that's actually more appropriate, because he wasn't so into the, you know, he was into many things, and he wasn't like, you know, he wants an Orthodox priest, but we just thought because it's the tradition he's born in. But they said, this is better. So anyway, so different things are done when a person is dying. So this term here, what is this term? Sam paraikam. This means the preparations for the next life. So Shukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit, you yourself can perform these now. And Prabhupada explains, but this is nothing formal. You know, there are formal rituals where you anoint the body, you say this prayer, very technical sometimes. You need a priest to, you know, perform it. He said, but these preparations are not formal. But some favorable conditions are necessary. That's what Prabhupada explains in the purport. So the teaching here in the Bhagavatam is that if you just have a few moments left to live, you should take shelter of kirtan. But if you have more time, it's still kirtan, it's still the essence of what to do, but you also have to consider favorable conditions that help you absorb your mind in kirtan. So like just us, hopefully here no one has just a few moments left to live. We have some time. We don't know how long. But not only should we take shelter of kirtan now that we have time, but we should understand what's favorable for kirtan. What are some favorable conditions? And therefore, in the 11th verse, when the answer is given that kirtan is the essence of what to do, Prabhupada speaks about the 10 offenses in that purport. Because that's very important to understand so that we can chant properly. Prabhupada says, Shukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit to take shelter of the sound representative of the Lord. And then therefore one should be aware of the 10 offenses. We read the 10 offenses a lot, and it sometimes seems like a random collection of ideas. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a very deep analysis of the 10 offenses and what is the essence of all of them. The 10 offenses, the only thing that separates us from experiencing the reality of the Holy Name, that it's Krishna Himself, and the beauty of the Holy Name, the only thing that that prevents us from experiencing that love. 10 things stand in the way. The 10 offenses. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, but actually it's one thing. These 10 offenses are 10 psychological manifestations of envy towards God. He explains. If you look at the 10 offenses closely and deliberate in that way, you'll see they all have this touch of envy towards God. Right? What is the first offense? To criticize the devotee of God. That's clear enough. If there's enmity in the heart, to criticize the devotee, we have to be so careful. Even when it's true, we have to be careful and not do it. You know, like sometimes we think, well, Prabhupada said, call a thief a thief. If someone is actually, you know, call a spade, if someone is actually doing all these terrible things, you should say it. But we have to be careful with the criticism. There's a kind of part of us that enjoys it. It's hard to admit this. So there is a way in which we have to be honest and speak what is truth. But to kind of really get into the criticism of devotees, even if it's true, is dangerous. And it shows that there's envy. There is enviousness in the heart. Now, the next offense, to consider the demigods to be equal to or independent of the name of Vishnu. Now, why is that envy? How is that envy? Because this verse is showing the uniqueness of the Supreme Lord. He's completely unique and independent and supreme. So if you say somebody else is also like that, you know, you take away the uniqueness. It also is a sign of envy. Like if someone, you know, cooks a great meal, and says, and someone tells you, wasn't that meal just delicious? That prasadam was so amazing. And you say, yeah, it was good, but this other person also cooks like that, and I know someone else who cooks like that. You know, it's all just good. You know, it takes away the glory of that person who cooks. It makes it all equal, in a sense. And that also can come from an envious heart, that the reason why you want to say Shiva's God, everybody's God. It is also a sign of envy. No, there's the Supreme Lord who's completely unique, independent of all others. The third offense, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. And also what's included in that is to consider the spiritual master an ordinary person. This is also envy. Even the body, it said, the body we should know is spiritual. This is hard. This is difficult for us, our minds, to grasp. But there's a nice reason given. You know, the body of the pure devotee. Because it's said, when you're a pure devotee, you've transcended Parabdha karma, the manifest karma. The physical body is the manifest karma. So the statement is there that you're not in a material body anymore. Now, it still does what a material body does. Why is that? It still gets old, you know, you still can get a cut and there's blood, you know, there's all these, you know, there's a gradual disintegration of the body, so it looks just like everybody else. But this is a nice explanation. The acharyas explain, even though it's a transcendental body, Krishna makes it still seem as if it's material body to protect, to maintain the confidentiality of the path of pure bhakti. To maintain the confidentiality, because imagine if you become a pure devotee and your body just becomes fully spiritual and starts glowing. Imagine what that would create in this material world. It would create actually chaos. You know, if only the devotees of Krishna are walking around and they're like this light is just coming off of these bodies, completely pure and radiant. People would think what is this, some kind of magic, this is crazy. You know, we'd start fighting and killing each other from something like that. So to maintain the confidentiality of bhakti, even though the body is transcendental of a pure devotee, it still has to just look like everybody else's body because it protects the confidentiality of the path of bhakti. You know, just imagine if it wasn't like that. If there was a group of people somewhere in the world that, you know, are just walking around floating and you know. So, this is an understanding for us that the body even is considered to be spiritual. You have a question about?
I just wanted to say still Shiva Prabhupada,
the people
who didn't know,
that's true.
Said he wasn't
known. That's true. Yeah, something got through anyway. Yeah, no, you're right. I thought about that too. We heard that comment that Prabhupada, somehow there's an aura, there's an energy that comes off a person. Imagine if you're actually in contact with your spirit. It will have some effect, but it can't be too much because that would interfere with the free will of the living beings who actually have to choose from their own heart to walk the path of bhakti. They can't see some magic and that's going to be the way Krishna, you know, forces us to become devotees. Or like, you create devotees for the wrong reason. When there's some special thing like that takes place, the people start coming for the wrong reason, you know? They'll come because of something else outside of themselves. But actually, we have to see that everything seems to be normal, but from myself, I want this, you know? I don't need to see some special miracle. I actually want Krishna. I actually want to develop my love for God. And then it's from a person and not just because of some external show. So this is what it means to protect the path of bhakti. It keeps it very pure and safe and protected from people who are coming for the wrong reason. So anyway, we can examine these 10 offenses. You have something, Prabhu?
I was thinking, how was one by Mani Bandhu?
Hmm.
Father.
Prabhupada, your pure devotee, is ever possibility that I can become pure devotee? Prabhupada said, why not? You are traveling with me, what do you see I'm doing that you cannot do? And if you do the everything, so then they had a conversation, I'm just paraphrasing from that discussion. Then Prabhupada said, what am I doing from morning till next morning? Do you see I'm engaging all my senses? And he said, yes. So they went through the list actually, Prabhupada and him. Prabhupada said, you can do the same thing and you will transform into pure devotee. Now I was bringing that comment on this 424 Bhagavad Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir, Brahmahutam Brahmahutam. There's a very specific, Baladev Vidyavarshan Thakur says, there's the application sense and composition sense. What is made of, it will stay made of like this. Satchidananda is not a material, neither spiritualized body is Satchidananda. We have to be very careful. Everything devotional may not be spiritual or transcendental. Like a drunkard can take prasadam, he is now performing spiritual activity, but he is not liberated. You follow? So there is a division. So what is composed of Satchidananda is Satchidananda. But what is material body, but it can become spiritual, spiritualized, like iron become, assume the quality of fire, and it will act like a Satchidananda, but still it is not Satchidananda. There has to be like a subtle understanding. But I think you are giving very nice explanation, I like that. And also I was thinking like in a practical sense, I will not say the mention of some name, but one Ishkan Guru told me a very funny story. He says, one of my disciples, he thinks, oh, he knows more than me. Then this will come that, oh, Guru, my Guru forgot the sloka. I memorized. So the envy is like an inborn, it's like a, due to my not properly seeing through Krishna's eye. So there is a tendency there. I'm not saying it should be.
Such an important point, Prabhu. Yeah. That envy, we have to just keep our eyes on our heart a little bit and see what's happening. That the envy can creep up very quickly. Like you said, you know, like we say the spiritual master is perfect, but we have to understand what that means. Perfect doesn't mean that everything can be necessarily recalled in the memory, or that, you know, Prabhupada is maybe perfect at math equations. You can, you know, challenge him with some question and see if he... Perfect means, Prabhupada explains in one place, that I'm never, the devotee who's never forgetting Krishna. At no moment are they unaware of Krishna. That is perfect. Everything they do is from love of Krishna. That is perfect. They're always thinking of Krishna. This is the perfection. They're absorbed. Everything is service to Krishna. That is perfect. But yeah, like the rest of us, the eyes become bad, you need glasses. Oh, where's the perfection? This person needs glasses, I need glasses. But this is the wrong understanding. We should know what perfection means. You know, Prabhupada was challenged sometimes, right? About how many windows are in the Empire State Building? They asked Prabhupada. What was his response? He said, how many drops of water are in a mirage? So he answered the question from another level, you know? How many windows are in the Empire State Building? Prabhupada said, he answered with a question to the same person. How many drops of water in a mirage? In other words, it's completely useless to even ask that. What devotee is perfect in what's most essential. Loving God, becoming reinstated in one's position as a servant of God. That's perfection. So, but yeah, nice point, Prabhu, about the envy, because you see how it comes up with the spiritual, oh, I know more verses, or I have some understanding, and we can lose faith too when we hear someone we have faith in and they may not know something, and then we think, ah, they don't know this, you know. But we don't see what's happening in the heart. We have to be careful of judging in that way. So it's nice, Bhaktivinoda Thakur just points out that if you look at all these 10 offenses from the angle of envy, You see, they all have a touch of envy, and this is the main issue. Even Bhagavatam, how does it start? Nirmatsaranam satam. Shukadeva Goswami says, your entrance into this Bhagavatam, you required to have no envy, to really hear Bhagavatam, to really chant the name. So, this verse in this section is telling us, at the time of death and in preparation through life, we have to chant the name of the Lord as the essence, as the essential practice. But we have to be very aware of these offenses, the envious heart. And there's one place where Jiva Goswami, he explains, when you have offenses to the name, there are five symptoms of that offensive mentality. And one of the symptoms, antara abhinivesh, the tendency for the mind to be absorbed in other things. So many other things besides Krishna. So right, this is our issue. We sit down to chant, and the mind is just off in other things. This is because of offense. And it also sustains offense, because inattentive chanting itself is an offense. So that's one thing we should really just focus on, is just the attention to the sound vibration of the name. You don't have to imagine anything and get into some, you know, imagination. But it's just to hear the sound vibration and just to know that I'm in the presence of God as I chant this name. And my mind will get distracted, so don't get too upset. You'll constantly be upset because it will be distracted. But then you notice, the awareness comes, oh, there I go again. Okay, back to the name. Back to the Maha Mantra. Again and again. And this is overcoming. This is the clearing stage. Right? There's three stages of chanting. Impure chanting. And there's pure chanting. And in between is this stage of clearing, where you have to make this effort. There has to be a little effort to keep the mind nicely focused on the sound vibration of the name. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna. And just that. You know, someone wrote Prabhupada a letter about my mind is so distracted when I'm chanting, and what should I do about that? The mind is so distracted. And Prabhupada said, what is the question of the mind? You just need a tongue and an ear. Don't let the mind get involved in chanting, actually. Think about that. You have a tongue that says the name and the ear that just hears it. And the mind intercepts and the mind gets into things and gets lost and just, you know, it gets lost for a whole life, for many lives. But it's just the practice of bringing it, just the ear, let the ear just hear it. You know? That's all. It's not easy, of course, when I say that's all, but it's that is the practice. And if we're making that attempt every day, we are doing something about the offensive mind. Because if you think about it, inattentive chanting on the deepest level is deliberate. It's deliberate because we're escaping from God. When you chant, what are you doing? You're putting God first, the name of God, and you're putting your mind on God. Now when your mind gets distracted, even though it's become like a habit, but somewhere very deep inside, it's deliberate because we want to escape from putting God first. So we might think, well, I can't help it. I just have a busy mind, distracted mind. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, I'm born that way. But that's a kind of an excuse, because on a deeper level, there's a part of us that wants to, because when you think, you know, my thoughts, my desires, my life, my concerns, these good things, these bad things, my worries, all of it is my. We stay centered in ourselves because we're just comfortable there. We want to remain there in the center. Even if it's my distress, that's still me being in the center. My anxiety, my pleasures, my desires. You know, we stay there and we want to stay there. But to put that aside and just hear the name means you're actually placing your consciousness on God first. So to chant that's why it said that inattentive chanting is also an offense. Because in a very deep place, it's deliberate. We want to escape from God into my own mind and my own thoughts and my own worries and my own concerns and my own life. So this realization helped me a lot, because I used to think, well, I just can't help it. You know, I just have a distracted mind, and I'm just going to be the rest of my life, my chanting is going to be a little distracted. But realizing that, oh, I actually want to be distracted, and it means that I'm not putting God first, even though I say that I like to do that, or I'm a devotee, and I'm not actually putting God first. I'm putting myself first. So then a little effort now, when you chant, it will happen, but then, okay, I'm doing it. This is envy. This is envy to be distracted, because I keep myself in the center. But now back to the sound vibration of the Lord. Our chanting has to come to that, because once we commit to that little practice, that little effort, then we're clearing, we're actually doing something. The clearing stage, we're doing something about offensive chanting. And then as soon as offensive chanting is gone, you know, then even just a reflection, the Abbas, the reflection of the Lord, not even the Lord himself directly, but just the reflection enters in when you're chanting Namabhat, when you're chanting, Namabhas. It said that just that reflection liberates one from material entanglement. It happens immediately. One is freed. And then as that more and more is cleared, then one actually starts to taste prema, love of God. So the only thing blocking that is the 10 offenses. And the 10 offenses in a very condensed form means envy. It means distracted chanting. So these are just some thoughts on today's section and verse, which is such a good section. But the power of the holy name, the question is asked, what is the most important duty in life? A person is about to die. And the answer is given by Shukadeva Goswami. Harinam Anukirtanam. To chant the name of the Lord. And then Prabhupada explains the 10 offenses in that same verse, the purport. And because here it's mentioned in this verse that, yes, it's chanting, but there are also some favorable conditions that are necessary. So Shukadeva Goswami tells Parikshit here, you yourself can make the preparations. You have 7 days to live. So he says, Upakalpaya tat sarvam. You can take care of everything that needs to be performed. Yam samprayayikam. You can perform these rituals that are needed to be done before you die. But Prabhupada explains those rituals are not formal. It's the chanting of the name, but without offense. And also creating the right environment for ourselves. We want to associate with devotees, relationships, hearing Bhagavatam. This is also the favorable conditions for chanting. And that's what we're meant to do in our lives. Such a nice section here. So thank you all so much for your participation and for listening. Are there any thoughts, comments, questions? Yes, Mataji. Is there a microphone?
I'm just kind of focusing on one thing that you said in terms of chanting, and it seems like it can be applied in so many ways. The idea that putting everything aside, like recently, let's say I was very hurt / offended by a certain situation, and it's hard to move on from that, you know? So, I mean, I guess that's false ego. I guess it's so many things, but that idea of setting it aside and just chanting, will that carry you, or do you have to revisit that and kind of, you know, help to dissolve it or make it right?
Yeah, there may be some need that there's a kind of back and forth, you know, where we have to see what's going on in our heart. We have to see if I can't let something go. And I have to admit my chanting is not pure. The faith is not pure, so it's not also pure chanting. So maybe, you know, there's a way in which we take care of things in our life that will help with our chanting. And there's a way when we just directly chant in a nice way that will also help the things in our life. So they're both You know, we have to determine for ourselves, you know, okay, if I just chant, that will overcome everything. That's true, but that's a certain quality of chanting. And maybe I'm not there. So maybe there are things in my life I have to figure out how to address and handle in a way where there's integrity and I'm careful. Like you said, if we offend somebody, if we're offended, you know, it hurts the heart. It's like it pierces the heart. And so we should do both of those things. You know, we should put everything aside when we chant, if we can, and just focus on the name, knowing that the name is actually purifying me. I'm in the presence of God when I say Krishna. That is actually Krishna. It's amazing. So, and that will purify. So, and then we have to see, okay, I do that, but here I am now with this issue in my heart. It's getting stronger. Maybe there needs to be something reconciled with a person. And that will also assist the chanting. So, yeah, that's a good question. Sure. Okay, there's one more question and then I'll read these couple of comments here. Yes, Mataji.
So, someone who's non-envious at all, it means that these thoughts of criticizing or whatever envy is will not come at all, or will they come and he will counteract with knowledge?
You know, it's said in the Nectar of Instruction by Rupa Goswami that the pure devotee is devoid of the propensity to criticize others. They're actually not even capable. Now, the thought may come, but because they're not identified with all the thoughts, they just let it pass. But it has no power over them. So, you know, the Bhagavad Gita explains, just like, you know, in the second chapter, text 70, that, you know, all these rivers are coming into the ocean. This analogy is given. Many rivers are coming into the ocean, but the ocean is still left completely. It's not moved by any of it, because the ocean is too vast and powerful. So a pure devotee's mind is like that. It's like this ocean of depth. And if some little thing comes by, some thought, has some strange thought or some desire, it's almost just watched and seen as nothing. And yes. So even though there may be a habit of the mind criticizing, nobody, the devotee doesn't identify with it, and so it has no power, and so it's not really coming from him.
So these thoughts, are they sent by Maya to give us some, like, test?
Yeah, we require tests, you know? We require tests in our stage that, you know, Maya is not, in the deepest levels, not our enemy, but a servant. Maya Devi is a servant of the Lord, and so she gives us different things so that we can also search our hearts and search the answer and take shelter of the Lord. So we have to make that shift from seeing Maya as this, I'm in this fight with Maya. We are in a fight in a sense, but it's only because of our egos. But there's another shift where we see that Maya is sending something to make me Krishna conscious. How can I now see it in that way? How do I understand it in that way? Hope that's helpful. Yes, please. Okay. What I'm reading?
There's a verse in First Canto, 7th chapter of it. Nona desti kalu sandra sarandhi yo sarabhu. Jatta sankirtana. So it says that you are not responsible for the offensive thought. If you look at the Prabhupada's record on that,
yes.
So it's very nice.
Yeah.
Offensive thought will be there.
Yeah.
We have no, but we are not responsible. In other words, we are not going to suffer.
Yeah.
But their dominance means if I allow it to dwell, I want to dwell on it.
Yep. Very nice. If I indulge in it.
Yes.
You know? There it is. It's coming up in the mind. Oh, now just let it go. But if I indulge, if I take it, yes, yes, and I relish it, and I get into it, criticism, whatever it may be, lust, you know, also thoughts come up, and then you think, but now I can either indulge or just let it pass. That choice is there, but we're so used to identifying with everything in our minds that we think sometimes we don't even have that choice. But actually there's a part of you that can separate, and we have to practice, and that's chanting. What are we doing when we're chanting? The mind, well, so many things will come up. Oh, let me see it. Let me not get too mad at myself. It's going to be there, the habit. And let me come back to the name. That's when you practice this, is when you chant. How can we expect to get there if we don't practice it when we chant? A couple of comments I just wanted to read from the chat. So this is a comment. The soul which desires wishes an alternate reality. That's Maya. Hence, at the root, it is the soul that embraces the Maya, the alternate reality and its conditioned state. Similar to what we're saying, there's a part, you know, there's something that's embracing Maya, but we can also not embrace, and we can instead embrace Krishna.
But it's not the soul, is it, that's embracing?
That...
Soul is the initiating cause. If soul did not have anything to do, the sexual would not be there and Maya would not be able to see
the cause. I guess the pure soul is embracing.
Yeah. And here's another. Okay, so another comment. We must. Okay. Well, someone's mentioning also the choice, albeit with all its implications, is always there. Just the same point from the previous comment. So there's another comment. Sometimes it may be necessary to criticize, and it's not envy. You know? Sometimes, so that I was mentioning a little earlier, even that we have to be careful. We have to consider, is it my service, first of all? How do I do it? How do I criticize? It may be not criticize, it may be just be pointing out something, you know, in order to protect someone else. But we have to check very carefully in our heart, again, if we're indulging, if there's something in us that actually wants to do so. You know, we talk about finding faults. The problem is you're trying to find them. We shouldn't be finding faults. You know, that shows the envy in the heart. If I'm finding, if I'm looking. Now, of course, if we see something inappropriate some devotee is doing, then we have to be careful and protect ourselves and protect others. And so you may have to say something. But to criticize, to get into that, to say more than just a few words may not be necessary at all. You know, just leave it alone. But you see, people can get into this. They can get into it, you know? And anyway, it can get really bad. And then we're totally just hurting ourselves and harming ourselves if we allow that. I mean, there's warnings everywhere in the Shastra about this. So before we think that, yes, there are some times that can be done. Maybe the word criticism, even in those times, is not best. We just have to sometimes point out what is true and be careful and protect ourselves and others and leave it at that. Move on with your life. Now chant nicely. There's so much we have to do for ourselves. To dedicate your life to finding some faults in others and to get too into that is very... It's the ruin of our spiritual life. And one more comment here, then we'll end. You say that envy is the source of all our offenses, but when it is general like that, it is hard to approach. How can we correct enviousness of Krishna? That's a good question, because, yeah, we were saying that, you know, the envy is the main problem. It just seems so general. So then we see, that's why we mentioned the 10 offenses. Every one of those 10 offenses, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is a form of envy. So look at those 10 offenses and see them in that light. You know, it's very interesting. And you start to get some insight. You know, we see the enviousness towards devotees. Of course, where does envy show up most visibly, and we can identify it, is when we're with devotees and when we're with devotees who are equal to us. If a devotee is so much more than us, then we usually just Wow, that's nice. We can appreciate. A devotee is so much less, so-called less than us, and maybe they're brand new or something, and then we feel like we feel compassionate, and we want to share things. But when we're with equal devotees, someone a little bit more than I have has, does this a little bit better. It's like, and then we start to feel this envy in the heart. And what can we do about that? You know, we can admit it to the devotee. We can go up to a devotee and say, Prabhu, I just, you know, we don't have to do this constantly to everybody. We can check what's going on in our own hearts. But if we see it's interfering or some way harming the relationship, you know, we can speak in such a way that we want to be honest. And so, yeah, so, but maybe a nice place to start is looking at the 10 offenses in this way and seeing how envy is contained in all of them. And then we'll see that, wow, envy is really the main issue in my heart. And so many things are connected to it, but it's considered to be the most essential issue in the heart, envy towards God.